Hey everyone, Chris Wan here. This is Accent Out Loud, a podcast about one person's take on English language learning, accent modification, and communication. In this episode, we're going to talk about a few different facts and questions, some basic stuff just about accent modification that I think would be helpful, I think would be foundational to talk about and sort of how I see accent modification as a speech language pathologist and what I think others, potential clients, potential people wanting to modify their accent, what they might see it as, so that we get to a better understanding of a professional's point of view and then a layman's point of view in terms of accents. It's episode 13 this time around. We're going to talk, this is more basic stuff, and I think the inspiration for this episode is having a discussion with one of my clients, and he said something to me that was really not striking, but it just sort of shows that I'm not necessarily advocating it as much as I should. And so it was really eye-opening in the sense that he basically had said, oh, a person with a Indian English background, so an Indian Punjabi or Hindi or Urdu speaking person coming to Canada, learning English and having that accent themselves, that might be something, their accent would be different from somebody from Hong Kong or China who's coming in with a Mandarin Chinese or Cantonese first language and then having that as your basis before you learn English. And it really struck a chord with me because that is very obvious to me that depending on what your primary language is, it'll impact your secondary language. So we're going to just do a few Q&A type things that I think are basic fundamental questions that people ask when they're first thinking about accent modification. So number one, can I change my accent? A lot of people, they come in and they want, not necessarily that they want to 100% eliminate their accent, but they want to know how good they're going to get, how much they're going to practice, how much expectation they should have. And I think the way that I answer it is, it really depends on you. It really depends on you, how much you're going to work, how integrated you are putting this into your lifestyle, how much are you going to change, how extreme you're going to go, right? If let's say you do nothing different and you come for a, 30-minute, 1-hour session with me once a week, or if you're practicing once a week, you're going to get the theoretical aspects of it, but you may not implement it fully into your daily life, right? So you really need to buy in, you really need to have that that understanding that this is fundamentally changing the way you communicate in English when you want to be clearly understood, right? It really makes a difference depending on your goals, your aspirations for this. If you want to tweak a specific word or tweak a specific phrase that you're always using, sure, you can make those changes. You can practice those things. And those can be things that you can incorporate into your daily life to make sure that you're able to pronounce certain words properly. But is it going to have a full range of implications? Maybe not, if you're not practicing all the time or you're not constantly thinking about it. And that's the whole argument for why people do immersive language experiences when they are picking up a new language. If they're picking up French, if they're picking up Japanese, if they're picking Italian, a lot of times the tips or the advice that people have is fully immerse yourself in that language. Move to that country. Only speak that language. You need to have that buy-in to really sell it for yourself. Another question that I think people have is how do you go about knowing what sounds are different and things like that? And this goes back to my first point, my point of inspiration for this discussion, is there are known patterns of speech depending on what your first language is. And the reason behind it is what your first language is determines what sounds you have or what sounds you have experience with and what sounds you might not have experience with. So let's say, for example, in Mandarin Chinese, you're not going to have a TH sound. That sound doesn't exist. So your th and your th. So in words like think or the TH in think and the TH in the doesn't exist. That sound does not exist in Mandarin Chinese, or even, for that matter, Cantonese. And so what happens in that situation is they don't have a Mandarin-speaking person who comes to Canada, who comes to the States, doesn't have that sound in their repertoire. They don't know how to make that sound. They don't have exposure to that sound. Now coming to Canada or the States, they hear it. They know T-H-E, the. They know T-H-I-N-K, think. So visually, they can read those sounds or those letters and know what the word means because they've learned it in written and reading. But when they try to pronounce it, their mouth doesn't move that way because they just don't, they were never taught to. And compared to somebody who grew up here, who naturally as a child made those mistakes, did that experimentation, babbled, made tons of sounds as a child, and eventually got the concept of making that TH sound, an adult trying to consciously or actively learn it without any proper training may not necessarily stumble upon it. So they do what best they can. They use the tools that they have to do the best job that they can do. And so you get something very close, but not exact. So you might get sink, I sink this, I sink that, or the, for the, right? Or the. So you might get the store is closed, right? Instead of the store is closed. So you get a very close approximation. You get D-E or a D replacing the T-H, or you might get an S sound instead of the T-H in words like three, right? You might get more three, one, two, three. So you're doing the best job you have with the tools you have, even though they don't quite fit with the English repertoire, because in English, we have that TH sound. So, depending on if you're a Mandarin Cantonese or Mandarin Chinese or Cantonese speaker versus maybe a Punjabi speaker, it'll determine whether you have that TH sound or not. Other languages, maybe they do have the TH sound, but they don't have another sound. And so every different language that then tries to map onto English has their own set of problems of what sounds they do have, what sounds they don't have. And that's how I and other people, when they're trying to learn an accent, have to sort of map. You have to figure out and isolate. And you can do this very easily on Google if you just Google Cantonese or Chinese or Punjabi speaker learning English or something like that. You'll Google it, you'll search it, you'll figure it out yourself. That's not what I'm talking about right now, but that's the idea, where you will find specific patterns of errors that each language has when trying to map onto English. And that's how I target it. That's how I work with clients, and that's how the situation builds in terms of knowing what are the things that I should focus more attention on or pay more attention to. Now, a lot of times people are frustrated with the idea that when they meet somebody new, the first thing that the other person, the listener, asks is, where are you from? And that's a hard one. A lot of times people are very frustrated. I don't want new people, I don't want strangers to ask me where I'm from. I'm from Canada for 20 years. I've lived in Canada for 20 years, or I've lived in the States for 20 years, right? I'm from Canada, I'm from the States. Why do people always still ask me, where are you originally from? And that's a hard one, because humans are very, very sensitive to sound. You're very, very specific and sensitive to differences in people's speech. Even if you have no background in detecting what differences are or how they're different, you can't tell me what the difference is exactly, but you can tell that there is some sort of difference. And there's research to back it up. I can't quite remember the paper myself right now, but there was a study out that determined that even if I am not a Spanish speaker, I do not understand Spanish, I can tell two different speakers, I can tell that they have different accents in Spanish. So we're so sensitive to hearing sounds that we can detect differences between two Spanish speakers, even though we don't know the language ourselves, we don't know what the difference is, we can't sort of pinpoint them, but we can tell that there is a difference of some sort. And so it becomes a very hard job to practice English or become so proficient in the English language that your original first language does not have an influence on your English speech. So that one is something that I can't guarantee for people. I can't tell people that working with me or working with anyone, working with any professional for modifying or changing speech or learning accents, that's not necessarily a guarantee. Ultimately, you can look at actors who do this for a living, who act, who play up role, who have professional help, who can probably afford the best professional help, and still, you can read in the reviews, you can read in the commentary, you can read in whatever film critics, that sometimes the accents are not believable. And so, truly, when your job is to play a role, play a character, and they're not successful, I think that sort of grounds my expectations for what people can and can't do. Now, I'm not saying that it's not possible, but I'm saying it's going to be definitely a hell of a lot of work to do so. Another question, or another thing that I do want to talk about, is the ideas of accents. So accents are the natural, normal process whereby somebody from, let's say, country A moves to country B, and country A's language does not nicely map onto country B. And so when you are learning country B's language, you have different patterns of speech than what country B's local people are used to. That's the only thing that an accent is. It doesn't mean you're inferior. It doesn't mean you're stupid. It doesn't mean that you're incompetent. It just means that your upbringing in country A is not considered expected or typical or the same as country B's cultural, social upbringing. That is literally the only difference. So when I see and I interact with people and I talk about accents, the thing that I really try to stress to people is that it's perfectly normal to have an accent. Everyone has an accent. Even if you don't think you have an accent, you just have a local accent. And B, I don't promote eliminating accents or reducing accents. My thing is, I like to see it as a toolbox which you can pull out accents that are appropriate in certain situations, just like an actor, right? An actor has a gig for a UK British accent, whip out your UK British accent. They have an American English accent, a general American English accent, whip out your general American English accent. It's a toolbox that you have that expands your repertoire for interacting with people and communicating a specific point. Whether it's a convincing character role, or whether it's to make yourself better understood in a North American conference. So the way that I like to see it is I try to teach people to have a North American accent that is effective in facilitating communication in a North American setting, in maybe a business meeting, a conference, project meeting, interview, those types of things. And so it's always sort of that what type of communication is most effective in that specific setting. So I think that's about it for today. What I want to do next is really dive in, do a deep dive on one specific actor's or famous person's communication in English and sort of talk about and highlight the specific things that I find or notice about their English and maybe why they're doing it that way, why they pronounce certain words a certain way, to really sort of better articulate what I'm hearing as a professional who is working with accents. See you in the next one. Have a good one. If you like what you're hearing, or even if you aren't, let me know. I know this podcast can be something great and educational for a lot of people. I'm here to listen, so give me your take, your likes, your dislikes, and maybe we can make this into something that'll help a lot of people. Leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Once I figure out how to read the reviews, I'm sure it'll help.